Another massive week on the Big Sports Breakfast. Coaches under the pump. Sit back and enjoy some of the interviews from the week. Well, the last game in the UK Super League was back on Sunday, March 15. They have a date now, August 2, it'll resume. And, Jimmy Maloney and his Catalans Dragons will be up against St Helens on that date. And Jimmy joins us now from over in France. How are you, Jimmy?
Very good, guys. How are you?
Going very well now, mate. Obviously, a lot of time off. Firstly, take us through what you've been up to outside the training, of course. You've had some time off you wouldn't have expected.
Yeah, exactly right. It's been a weird old year, but with all the things that's going on, there's been plenty of positives, and it's sort of coming into summer now, and we haven't been playing footy, which is pretty rare for this time of year usually. So been lucky and been able to get out and about with the family, and we took a camping car and did a 10-day trip and did a bit of sightseeing around France and all that. So we've been making the most of it. Still doing training here and there and keeping the body fit and ticking over, and a couple of weeks and we're back all together and do about 3 weeks training into the start-up date, which is August 2nd.
Yeah, James, back to team training July 6th. Have you still been in regular contact with your teammates, though?
Yeah, we still see. We've been training in, small groups at different fields around the place, and it's always nice to just to see the boys, because obviously we're in full-blown lockdown for 2 months, so it's a long time to not get to see the boys and things like that. So Now that things have slowly been returning to normal-ish, been trying to get around and catch up with different boys, whether it's down at the beach or whatever for a coffee and touch base with them.
Yeah, obviously it wasn't what you'd planned when you'd first signed with Catalans, Jimmy, and obviously it's been challenging over there with the family being in lockdown. But did you ever think that you would come back to Australia during that period, or was the plan always to stay there and see it through?
Yeah, I think we never really thought about leaving. I suppose the hardest thing was you never really had a definitive date, so you never really, knew. And then obviously if you came home, you had to self-isolate for 2 weeks, and then the dream was whether you could actually, Australia would let you fly back over, and I think it became a logistical nightmare to try and work it all out. So, we just bunkered down, and the 2 months had some times where it was tough, but now that it's sort of finished and gone, and looking back on it, it doesn't seem anywhere near as bad as it probably seemed at certain times. So, and as I said, there's been plenty of positives since, where we've now coming into really good weather, and we're not playing and doing things, and we've been able to get the opportunity to travel and do things like that, which is something that we'd never normally get to do as well.
And Jibby, you'd just about be fluent in French by now, wouldn't you?
Oh, mate, not fluent. My kids are going good there, because they're in the full French school, so they've picked it up really quick. So now they're at the point where people are talking French, and if we don't understand, they'll chime in and say, oh, they're saying this and they're saying that. So I'm slowly getting there, but obviously even the time away from training and not being around the French boys every day, that probably made things a little bit harder, because just being around it, hearing it regularly obviously helps you pick different things up. But slowly working away and trying to get better.
So I'm guessing on the camper van trip, it was the kids getting you out of the lost in translation experiences?
Yeah, mate, that was pretty good. There was a lady, we were waiting for a taxi one day, and the lady pulled up, and I thought she was asking for directions. And I'm sort of trying to, she said something about plage, which is like the beach, and I was like, oh, yeah, go down here and take a left. I think that's about all I know. But she was actually offering us a lift. So we ended up all jumping in this old lady's car, and I think she must have just been a friendly old lady who goes around and gives people lifts. And then she's driving us down, and the kids are telling me, oh, nah, she, you're the second person we've picked up today, and they're sort of deciphering what she's saying. So it's pretty interesting.
Corey, great to have you on the Big Sports Breakfast. How are you, mate?
Good, thank you.
Well, such a contrast, your first game at the Titans to your second. You left the field against the Dragons after a high shot there from Jordan Pereira after game two. You're celebrating a win. Take us into that dressing room for a team that's, you know, struggled for success in recent times to beat the local rivals, the Broncos. What was it like in the dressing room after the match?
Yeah, it was good after the match. Obviously, all week we prepared for the, you know, the local derby against the Broncos, and, you know, all the boys were up for it, and to come away with, you know, not only a, you know, a win, but, you know, a good solid performance from the whole 17. I thought, you know, we defended with energy and attacked the same. So, you know, it was real good in the sheds after it.
Corey, can I ask, what's some of the differences from obviously leaving the Tigers and then straight into the Titans setup that you've noticed?
I guess every coach has got their, you know, their little techniques and. Mm. And going from Madge, you know, he's a good coach, and Justin's just as good. All he does is influence positive, you know, energy. He knows what you're capable of, and, you know, before the game, Justin just says, you know, go out and play footy the way you know it. You prepared all week, and, you know, Justin sort of doesn't, you know, overload you with information or, you know, worry you too much. He knows. You know, you can do the job, and he gives you that confidence to go and do it.
Is that transition from a player's perspective comfortable?
Yeah, it's good. First day, you know, I came, he didn't overload me with information. He welcomed me, and all the boys did. And you know, obviously the Dragons game was cut short, but before I ran out, he goes, you know, just play the way you usually would at the Tigers, bring the energy, you know, listen to the halves and support the big boys. And, you know, that was great. I just felt comfortable straight away and confident in myself and just went out there.
Yeah, what were the reasons for leaving? Was it just a greater opportunity to secure a position in that top 13 for the Titans compared to the Tigers?
Yeah, it was. It was sort of weird. I obviously played the first two games for the Tigers and missed out when the season resumed. And you know, I wasn't looking elsewhere. I was ready to stay and compete at the Tigers, and my manager told me that there was an opportunity on the Gold Coast, and, you know, we were up front with the Tigers. There was no, you know, talking behind anyone's back, and I just told them what the opportunity was for myself to take at the Titans, and, you know, the Tigers were really happy, and, you know, they thanked me for, you know, for what I brought and how I competed down there, and they let me go. So, you know, there was no bad blood, and, you know, it was really good to be able to come back home.
Can you tell us about the practical element of just having to move so quickly, Corey? Or was it a matter of, well, okay, I've got the release, fill the car up or pack up a truck and off you go the next day?
No, it went for a couple of weeks, like the back and forward. And even up to when the Tigers versus the Raiders in Campbelltown, you know, I packed the house and I booked the removal truck and I still wasn't sure if I was going. Madge spoke to me before the game and he goes, I know that, you know, you might be leaving, but, you know, if we get an injury tonight, we're not going to let you go. So, you know, I was at the Tigers game watching and thinking, you know, it was still up in the air, and, you know, the boys got through all good, and, you know, I got the all clear to leave Sunday morning. So 5:30 the next day, I drove up to Queensland.
We're going to talk some racing now, and great news today with the Kosciuszko. Tickets are for sale, and joining us is the Chief Operating Officer at Racing New South Wales, Graham Hinton. How are you, Graham?
Very good, thanks. Thanks for having me, guys.
No, great to talk to you as always on the Big Sports Breakfast. So what are the details on sale today? Where can we get them? How much are they?
Kosciuszko tickets, $5 for a ticket, and you win a chance to win a share in the $1.3 million prize money on the Kosciuszko, which is on Everest Day on Saturday, 17 October. You can buy the tickets in the Tab app, Tab website, or at any of your local Tab venues.
And when will the winners be drawn or announced, Graham?
So we'll draw 14 winners on the 9th of September, and each of those winners will essentially win a slot in the race. It's not dissimilar to a mini version of the Everest. So if you win, you'll own a slot in the Kosciuszko. You'll go and pick a horse out that you want to represent you, and then on the day, you'll be standing there cheering with the owners because you'll get a share of that horse's prize money.
And it's only New South Wales residents, Graham, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. Yes.
And just, you know, the romance of this race and getting people involved who can own a horse on a day for a $1.3 million race has created some great stories, hasn't it, Graham?
Look, it has. It's been an enormous concept since we launched in 2018. I still remember I had the pleasure of calling the winners after we drew the first lot in year one. And the group of blokes, it was a punters club, actually, that I called that ended up having the winning horse. And they picked Bell Flyer. It was a 70-1 shot to win the race when they picked it. And everyone thought they were mad. And I still remember on the day watching them jumping up and down and cheering because they'd backed it for a Mozza. They'd won their share of the slot. And it was a group of mates all together that had always punted as a group. Like, it was a perfect scenario. It was sensational to see.
Yeah. Graham, just on that, if you know, if someone's listening out there and they don't know how it all works and they buy, you know, one or two tickets and they happen to win the slot, is there a chance that, or how do they go about you know, getting the horse and how do they find the horse? Is there a network that may be able to help them get in touch with people, or how do they go about finding the trainers and horses?
Yeah, so we know that that's sort of a big ask for someone to, especially if you're new to the industry. So what we do is we assist through that process. So we'll draw up a list of all the leading contenders for the race with all the contact details. We brief them in as soon as they win and to some extent hold their hand through that process to make sure they, you know, that they get the right deal, that they get a good horse to partner with, and they enjoy the experience. So there's nothing to be afraid of in terms of the complexity of it. We'll make sure, you know, that it all goes smoothly and that you're there on the big day.
Now, people can buy as many tickets as they want, can't they?
100% right. So what we see is punters club throwing in together and buying a big batch between them and hoping they get out there on the day, which has happened. We also see quite a lot of horse owners actually thinking, well, geez, the best way for me to get the horse in the race is to win a weigh-in. That way I get the whole prize money. So a lot of horse owners that have got contenders in the race are going out and buying hundreds of tickets.
Yeah. And a couple of months ago, we probably all thought that it wasn't going to be crowds back at the footy and back at the races, but we look as though we're on track to have a crowd out there as well.
Well, it's looking very likely. Yeah, that's right. So certainly anyone buying a ticket will be pretty confident they'll be there on the day.
Just on crowds as well, Graham, we've had some texts in regards to, say, the Grafton Carnival coming up. Have you got any more information as to what sort of crowds would be able to go to, say, some of those country meetings and carnivals that are coming up in the next month or two?
We're working on it furiously, and I think the key point there is obviously a lot less risk in the country, so there's no active cases, and what we're hoping to put something out shortly to be able to give people a guide.
G'day, Kevy. How are you, mate?
Oh, excellent this morning. Thanks, boys. Just got back from Sydney for a bit of work over the weekend on all the Fox footy stuff, which was another good weekend of footy, wasn't it?
Geez, that was quick, Kevy. What time did you leave?
Oh, I got the flight, mate.
Yeah. Oh, the flights are back open.
Yeah. Private jet, mate. No.
Oh, that new deal you signed with Queensland, too.
Yeah, it's all part of it, mate. You had that in your contract.
No, I got brush, mate. I was a scooter.
You on the bus?
Yeah, no, I didn't get a bus. They wanted to hit me with one. They drove over me in the end.
Congratulations, though, Kevy, on signing the deal to take you through to the end of the 2021 series. No-brainer, I'm sure, from your perspective.
Oh, look, yeah, I'm obviously very grateful for the opportunity to coach Queensland again in 2021. This year's series is a little bit different, being in November, but still just exciting for me. And, you know, just watching the football over the weekend again, it's just great to have our footy back. And then with Origin on in November, it's going to be an awesome series from a Queensland point of view.
And what about with the Broncos, mate? So you've indicated that, well, if Anthony Seibold requested some help, you're more than happy to go back and help. Is that the case?
Well, all I said was, yeah, if they want to reach out and if they need some help, I'd be happy to help. But, you know, I am with my roles, you know, with Queensland and with Fox, obviously, you know, very committed to those roles as well, and with, you know, with the Queensland stuff coming up. So, but again, if they reached out, well, you know, I'd be happy to help them.
Kevy, I'm just trying to think, did you help them out before for a little
I went
period?
Back there in 2018 for about four months or so, yeah.
Yep.
And it just got too much with Origin and my work at Fox. So, yeah, so I wasn't there in Wayne's last year. I think Wayne's last year, well, it was 2018 in the end, wasn't it? No, 2019 was his.
Well, right, so, yeah.
I get lost in all the years. No, 2018 was the last year with the Broncos. Yep. Then he went to South last year, and this is his second year at South. Yeah, so I was there. But yeah, through that period, yeah. But they were great group of young fellas that the Broncos. I feel for the players more than anyone because you can see the frustration in their face. You know, they're trying as individuals. There's a lot of effort going in, but they're just sort of not getting it together as a team. I'm sure everyone is seeing that as well.
Kevy, can I ask, what do you see from afar? And I would imagine, like all sporting teams, there's a lot more that happens in-house. But from the distance you sit now, what are some of the concerns for you at the Broncos?
Well, I see frustration, you know, amongst the playing group. I see them playing, you know, as individuals, not really as a team. And we all know, you know, in rugby league, you've got to have all hands pulling in, all feet, everything working in the right direction together. And that's what I've seen. I just see some frustration as well from a few of their players. And, yeah, as a former player, you know, of the club, you know, no one likes to see this happening to any club, particularly one that you've been associated with for a long time. So that was the reason, yeah.
Obviously, there's a disconnection there somewhere at that club with coaching, players, administration, supporters. Because the observation from a lot of the supporters at the end of the game was the players don't care enough because they saw some of the Broncos players react in a way that they didn't like. And some of those players were high-fiving, laughing with the opposition. What was your take on that?
Yeah, well, again, I agree with the people there. I mean, but that's a trend that's more common now in our games. I remember losing to the Raiders, Laurie, against you, and I'd shake your hand, but I'd want to squeeze the living daylights out of your hand in the meantime. And you've got to be a sportsman and shake the opposition's hand, win or lose. But then, you know, get off the field and sort your mess out if you're losing. If you're winning, get off the field as well and be very humble, you know, in when you are winning as well. So that's how I see it. But it's not just the Broncos players. I see a lot of players at all different clubs doing that now. It seems to be a common theme, you know, amongst them. And that's just probably the next generation of players coming through and how they, you know, react after a win or after a loss after a game.
Jimmy, how are you, mate?
Not too bad. I'm just enjoying the COVID state down here. They've redone the number plate down here. I think it used to be Victoria on the move or something silly like that. Now they're redoing them, Victoria, the COVID state.
Yeah, I was just going to ask Jimmy, have you found a house to rent in Sydney yet?
I think the whole of Victoria is trying to help. They're going to throw us in prison if you come up to New South Wales or Queensland.
Oh, it's out of control, isn't
madness,
it?
Madness, isn't it? But let's start with a positive, Jimmy. And it's such a huge weekend for your old club, Geelong. Joel Selwood, game 300.
I thought you were going to say steel sidebottom found only partially closed.
Positive. Rather than, you know, we'll get to that. We'll get to
rather
that.
Than fully nude.
We'll get to that. Joel Selwood, game 300. Gary Ablett Jr., game 350. And up against Matt Rowell, I think, is pretty ironic as well from the Gold Coast, the next so-called champion coming up. But what do these two players mean to that club, Ablett and Selwood?
Oh, they've been enormous. So the first one, Gary Ablett, imagine having the shadow of your dad coming in at AFL football like Gary Ablett Senior, who, depending on who you are, he's one of the best three players of all time. Now, there's always the argument, is it Wayne Carey or Lee Matthews? But either way, best three, he's got a grandstand named after him. But then you've played so well in your career that there's a debate whether you're better than your old man. So to live up to that, the pressure, the performances he's put on, and then to go up to the Gold Coast and be pretty much a one-man team up there for quite a number of years, it's extraordinary, his career and what he's been able to do. And then Joel Selwood, from day one when he walked into the club, I think I was in my fifth year when he came in, all the guys go, geez, he's ready to go. He just walked straight into the senior side and hasn't been put out since, and just, I think he's had 190 games as captain, so it just reflects on his leadership. And not only that, his just ability to perform week in, week out in such a physical way he plays the game.
Where do you rate Gary Ablett Jr., Jimmy?
I've got him equal with the best player I've played with. I've got him with Matt Scarlett. Matt Scarlett, five or six-time All-Australian at fullback, and just the reason why I rate Scarlett so high was he changed the way you played fullback. Fullback was normally a pretty dour position where you just run and punch it away. But Scarlett in a grand final had 29 possessions from fullback. It was extraordinary. So those two are the best I've played with. I was lucky enough to play all my
junior football with Gazza as well. So I had a nice armchair ride there for about 15 years.
No, you went all right yourself, mate. Now, players are scrambling at the moment, trying to find, well, they had to before last night there. What, about 36 suburbs across Melbourne? So they had to try and find new places just before midnight?
Yeah, they've locked down, for people unaware, they've locked down postcodes here in Melbourne where there's been hotspots, and some players live in those hotspots and things like that. So they've got to find some accommodation, and they've even tightened the rules even more so. So the players had pretty strict rules to start with. I think they're only allowed to do a couple of things. Now it's from your bedroom to the training track, back, and then to the ground that you can be playing footy at, because it, as we've seen, it takes one player to wreck it for everyone. And the AFL's got special sort of passes or clearances to be able to keep their season going under all these conditions from, you know, state governments and health authorities. But it only takes one player to ruin it, and those health authorities go, see, you won't even listen. And they have to tighten the rules again.
Yeah, and Jimmy, how far, in your opinion, do you think the AFL is from having to postpone again the competition? If Melbourne go, obviously their postcodes now, but if they go to a complete lockdown, where's the AFL sit then?
Yeah, I think, Clarkie, then they'll have to actually look at all the Victorian clubs moving and hubbing, whether it be New South Wales, West Australia, a couple of different hubs, and the season maybe just being delayed a week or two while they get all set up. But they've been very clear, the AFL, and it's the reason why they went the short quarters. They went to everyone playing each other just the once. They were very clear that try not to think of the AFL season as in rounds. Think of it as we've just got to get the amount of games done, a bit like they do in, you know, soccer and Premier League, where you've got some teams who play 26 games and others have played 22. It's just by the end of the season, they all would have played each other once.
Now we've got to preview round 8 in the NRL. Joining us as she does each and every Thursday from Fox League, Yvonne Sampson, how are you this morning?
Good morning, boys. How are you?
Going very well. Now, Brisbane.
Listening to that Zimbabwe loss, I just had a quick Google. It said Australia have been humiliated by Zimbabwe in the most shambolic performance of the Darren Lehman era.
Hey, Vonnie, you know what he's done this morning too? He's blamed the selectors.
No, I haven't. I take full accountability.
Well, hang on,
responsibility.
You just said you didn't get the team you wanted.
I said this. I said it was the first time and probably the last time in my captaincy that I actually opened my mouth in a press conference about the selection of a player.
Yeah, and you wanted a player, and they didn't support you.
Listen, as you know, when you are in charge of a team, a business, whatever it is, you don't always get your own way, Laurie. But as a leader, it doesn't matter.
As the Australian captain, you were denied Stephen Smith, so therefore they went against you, Michael
Clarke.
Don't
even think about it. That's a story.
That's the story today, Vonnie, in the paper.
Vonnie, continue. So nice to hear your voice. Every Thursday, I look forward to you being on our show, Vonnie.
Vonnie, there's been only one bigger spat this week than the Clark Daily spat here this morning, and that is Anthony Seibold and Wayne Bennett. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's been another wild week for the Broncos, and the Courier Mail are doing this three-part feature on the culture crisis destroying the Brisbane Broncos, this once very proud club. Now, Paul White had to come out and defend Anthony Seibold's appointment, despite some calling it a sham. He is the former Dally M coach of the year. Look, it's going from bad to worse for them up there. Just the ferociousness of the criticism. I just can't imagine what it's been like. I mean, I used to cover the Broncos beat when I worked for Channel 9 up in Brisbane. And, you know, when it's a one-team town, it can be very difficult to do your job and to have those press conferences. And that was when Wayne Bennett was involved. And look, we know when Wayne is in a mood, it's like dark storm clouds. And, you know, you feel like all the happiness has been sucked out of everything because he's got such an incredible aura around him that he really has that potential to make it so grim. And, yeah, for him to now focus on the Broncos, break his 18-month silence and have a bit of a dig at the club that he gave so much success to. It's really, really ugly and it's really public.
Well, it's an important game for the Broncos then this weekend, because I know they've been under the pump, but I can only imagine if they don't beat the Warriors this weekend, then there's no Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, and we know what the Warriors are going through. All hell could break loose.
Well, do you feel like it's careers on the line, this game against the Warriors for Anthony Milford, for Darius Boyd, and potentially for Anthony Seibold? Do you feel like it's got that magnitude of it?
That's what it sounds like, Vonnie. It sounds like something like that could tip everyone over the edge, and then they're all scrambling around trying to look after their own positions. And then you'll start to see some fractures occurring. And already, you know, there's talk about... you know, the Broncos, well, it was going to be 2 years before we fixed the problem that we had here. And you go, well, hang on. No, when you look at that squad that he inherited, that was a team there that was, you know, should be playing finals football. And they were the ones that decided to move on some of the more senior players. And the hierarchy were the ones that decided to invest in this youth policy because they thought that was the way forward. And now they're backtracking on that as such. So yeah, this sounds like there's mixed messages and there's a bit of confusion in what they're trying to tell people.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, you know, once they let players like Andrew McCulloch go and Josh Maguire and realise what they'd lost and they didn't have enough to cover it. So, you know, the blowtorch is on the entire squad. And I know that we always say Anthony Milford, but Alex Glenn's had to come out and say, look, yes, as the highest paid player there, do we need more from Milf? Absolutely. Can he do it all on his own? No. He needs the other guys around him. But it sort of seems like we were talking about, you know, Anthony Milford and Ben Hunt, you know, when they weren't really going well. And then it was Anthony Milford, Cody Nikorima. Now it's Anthony Milford, Brody Croft. You know, Milford seems to be that common thread through, you know, some underwhelming performances. And not to really hammer down on him, but, yeah, you definitely need to see him take on the line, run the ball, do something, because the Broncos just look so stale and they look... you know, reluctant to do anything or change it up. And they're just serving up the same thing week after week. And it's absolutely not good enough.
Well, last weekend we had a fight of the year candidate in the UFC. Dan the Hangman Hooker, the Kiwi, in his lightweight bout in Vegas there, just lost in a unanimous decision to Dustin Poirier. Both fighters went to hospital after. It was brutal, and he certainly left it all there in the octagon, Dan the Hangman Hooker, who joins us on the line now from New Zealand. How are you, Dan?
Yeah, not too bad at all.
Now, tell us, what was the damage? Because looking at pictures of your face, mate, it was as brutal as it gets.
Not too many injuries, if I'm being honest. I had a few cuts over one eye, so 10 stitches over one of my eyes. But as I'm pretty experienced with, stitches heal pretty quickly.
Dan, how do you come back from this? Obviously, you're a young man. You've had enormous success, and I've got to say, I love watching you fight. You're unbelievable. But mentally, what are some of the challenges now? Do you take some time to, I guess, to have a look at, you know, that fight, or are you keen just to jump back in?
I already know the mistakes I made leading into that fight, so. It's pretty straightforward. You just correct the mistakes that you made and get back out there. I plan on fighting fairly soon. I would like to get one in before the end of the year and have a couple of opponents in mind.
Dan, what happens after a fight? Does Dana White get in touch with you guys, or is it more about you trying to find the guy that you want to fit and then getting in contact with Dana and then saying, hey, listen... we believe that we can, you know, get this show on the road, this match happening.
The UFC take pretty good care of you after they make sure you're medically, and they never really rush you to get back in there. And I think social media has a big part to do with it. So you start getting interviewed and that starts getting posted on social media. So the UFC bosses, they'll follow the social media trends and see what fights the fans want to make. So they really just make the fights that the fans want.
Yeah. And after a fight like the one you've just had, how long does it take to recover, and how long, you know, do you believe you get back into your best physical shape to get out there again?
Every fight's different. You know, I've had like quick wins in the past, like knockout wins in a minute or 2 minutes, and come off a lot more seriously injured than I am now. Like everything I've got from the weekend is kind of just bumps and bruises and scars. So they'll heal fairly quickly. You know, it's when you break a bone or tear a ligament, that's when you're facing a longer stretch. So there's no real time. You know, there's no hard rule of law about when you can get back in there. It's all down to, you know, you personally and your motivation. And I'm still feeling super motivated, so I'm looking to get back in.
Dan, do you have a break now from training, or are you recover and straight back into it?
Me, myself, I'm a little bit crazy, so I'll jump straight back in. So I've got 12 more days in my quarantine back in New Zealand, but as soon as I'm out of here, I'll be straight back in the gym.
Ah, well, Will's from South Australia, so we may as well pump up South Australia. How are you, Will?
Good, thanks, guys. How you going?
Yeah, good, thanks. Beautiful place to travel, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It's plenty to do there. Get down there if you can.
Absolutely. Now, when were you told you were playing the West Coast Eagles this week and not Melbourne, and you're playing now at the Gold Coast, not Sydney? When did this all eventuate from the player's point of view?
That happened pretty quickly. We only found out yesterday, so... pretty much the same time as everyone else, I think.
Now, 28-point loss to the Dogs, coming after your 11-point win against North Melbourne. Where do you need to improve, though, coming out of that loss last week?
I think for us, we pop up for a good quarter here and there, and we just need to get some good fourth-quarter footy going. We need to be competitive over the length of a full game and not for a quarter here and there. So, adjusting our mindset and really honing in on the competitive side to it for a full game, I think.
Yeah, talking of your mindset's been challenged a number of times this season with what's occurred with the AFL, and obviously it's another challenge this weekend. As a playing group and as a coaching group, have you sat down and discussed the challenges that you may face this year and how you have to just put that aside and just be concerned about training hard, and then wherever we play, no matter whether we've got to travel, if it's a late call up 2 days before, we've just got to get on with it?
Yeah, I think, after that long period we had off, everyone was just, you know, really happy to have footy back. And we're obviously happy to do whatever it is that the AFL wants us to do. And if we need to, you know, get our games changed or anything like that, that's no worries for us, because, you know, no one's really got a head start out of this. So it's all even, and we're just happy to do whatever to keep footy going.
Will, can I ask, when you lose a senior player and such a great player in someone like Buddy Franklin, does your structure and style of play change for a forward, or do you continue to try and fill that role with, you know, different personnel?
It's a big shoes to fill not having Bud out there. I think because we have gone with a lot smaller forward line this year, so... we've been trying to move the ball a bit differently and, trying not to, you know, just kick it high and long into the forward line, because a lot of the time I have a few tall intercept marking defenders. So, yeah, it's been about moving it and lowering our eyes a bit more and, just sort of hunting them at ground level.
Yeah, well, I've heard some commentators, and we had Jimmy Bartel on our program last weekend, talk about, you know, the setup for the Swans and how you've got these small forwards. And he was saying that the SCG is not a ground that suits the Swans. Do you read anything into that? He believes that you're better suited on bigger grounds like the MCG.
We haven't played our best footy at home recently, and it's something that we need to work on. And I don't think we look at it as the disadvantaged our home ground, and we love playing there. So I just think we need to really hone in on what the problem is and what teams are doing to us there.
We're talking to Will Haywood from the Swans now. Will, Sam Naismith, describe how the players have rallied around him coming off suffering an ACL, and also he's gone through terrible personal tragedy in recent times, hasn't he, with the death of his sister?
Yeah, he's... he showed incredible resilience to come back from successive injuries in the past, and you know, especially with his sister and what happened through that isolation period. Yeah, he's been through a heap. So everyone's absolutely rallied around him at the club, and you know, he's an extremely resilient character. So you know, I'm sure that he'll get stuck in his rehab, and we'll see him back up in footy field again.
Oh, Jack, it must feel different again having a game on this week. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Now, to what extent, Jack, did the Waratahs and yourself, you wipe the slate clean and start again after having, what, a 1-6 start under the old Super Rugby comp?
Yeah, definitely. There's a bit of a new feeling around the place of training now. I think we've definitely just tried to, as you said, wipe the slate clean and just start again. And we've got quite a young squad, so I think it's actually been a bit of a blessing for us. Just that opportunity to go back to the drawing board and start again. And, yeah, a bit more time to, you know, get on top of things.
Yeah, Jack, talking of opportunity, no KB, he's left, and this presents a great opportunity for yourself.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one. You know, KB is obviously, you know, a legend of our game and done so much for rugby in New South Wales and Australia. But personally, you know, now that he's gone, it's opened up an opportunity for me, you know, at the back, which is where I've played most of my footy growing up, and I'm a bit more comfortable there. So, yeah, while you lose a lot of experience, and KB was a great mate, a great mentor, you know, it's sort of exciting to step up and, I guess, take on a bit more responsibility in the team.
It's great that rugby is back up and running in this country, and it's great to see the Waratahs taking on the Reds. And we know from other sports in Australia, in particular State of Origin, the great rivalry between New South Wales and Queensland. Can you take us into the Waratahs and what it's like to be a part of your group in the lead up to taking on the Queensland Reds?
Yeah, well, we're quite a young side, to be honest. So a lot of guys haven't really, you know, been experienced that before. I've never been experienced to either. I've played most all my Super Rugby down in Melbourne before, so I've never actually played this New South Wales versus Queensland derby before. We actually had Paul Gallen come in last week and have a chat about that and the rivalry. So, yeah, I guess that sort of pumped a few guys up and made it feel a bit more real. So, yeah, there is definitely that, I guess, that pride on the line and the bragging rights. So, yeah, we're pretty pumped to go and give it a good crack.
Yeah, because I think, you know, supporters feed off that rivalry, and they'd like to see that rivalry between the two states. And I just wanted to know, because I'm talking from a league's perspective here, that there's great hatred and there's great rivalry between the two states. I'm just wondering what it was like in the camp for New South Wales. And, you know, and then again, I'm wondering what it'd be like up there in Queensland. Is it different because a lot of players from Queensland come down and play for New South Wales, and similarly New South Wales players go out there and play for Queensland?
Yeah, we've got a few old Queensland boys on our side. I'm sure they don't like that Queensland. Yeah, they've probably got a target on their heads this weekend, those boys. Yeah. But yeah, look, the rivalry is definitely strong. I mean, it's not, you know, I don't think it's, you know, sort of State of Origin, that stigma, because I guess these games come about, you know, a few times every year. And it's sort of strange as well, because you end up playing with one of those boys at the end of the year, which I guess, you know, for some boys makes it more personal, and some boys it makes it, you know, a bit, you know, not as confrontational and stuff. But, yeah, look, I think for fans it's a massive one as well. You know, I guess the, as you said, like league and just that old rivalry and getting one up. So, yeah, look, we're certainly, we couldn't be much more motivated than what we are about on Friday night.
I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall and be inside Carmichael Hunt's mind when Gal was talking about State of Origin.
Yeah, he chirped up a few times to Gal, I think.
G'day, Dick. How are you?
Hi, boys. We're making it over here.
Good stuff. Now, big news in the NFL in the last couple of days. And I love the fact, well, firstly, the Patriots, they were, what, fined $1.1 million. They had to forfeit a draft pick as well after, well, they were found to be spying or filming the Bengals sideline back in December last year. And was it about 17 minutes later, the story dropped that Cam Newton was joining their roster?
Yeah, that's about the timing. And the Cam Newton story dwarfed the other story, no question about it. That became the biggest story of the weekend. You know, it's interesting. You could not find a more different person, more different quarterback than Cam Newton versus what the Patriots have had for the last 20 years. I mean, Tom Brady is the consummate leader. He is the consummate accurate quarterback, one of the most accurate quarterbacks in NFL history. All the intangibles are there, and then you shift to a quarterback in Cam Newton, who, you know, for my money, has been the most intimidating running quarterback of all time. I mean, we can talk about Michael Vick, we can talk about Lamar Jackson, but those were probably better running quarterbacks as far as their elusiveness and their speed, certainly. But there's never been a quarterback in NFL history other than Cam Newton who literally invited contact and forced the contact upon the defense. I mean, he runs like a fullback. He runs like a rugby player. I mean, that's how Cam Newton has made his living, and it has taken a toll on his body. And I think that's going to be the real question surrounding Cam Newton is what percentage of the 2015 Cam Newton are the Patriots going to get? Are they going to get 80-90% of Cam Newton? Well, if that's the case, then they're an absolute Super Bowl contender again. I don't think they're going to get 80-90%. I think they're going to get closer to 50% or 60%, which puts them, you know, right around that 9 or 10 win mark, fighting for a playoff spot. But, you know, it's going to be hard for Cam Newton to revitalize his career after sitting out all of last year and then really never being the accurate quarterback, always being the guy to rely on his body and his legs. And that body and legs, those go quicker than all the intangibles that Tom Brady has. And that's why he and Drew Brees are still playing in their 40s, because they didn't put their body under the same type of stress that Cam Newton has over the last decade.
Given that you believe he's not going to reach anywhere near his potential, then, Dick, obviously it's a risk that the Patriots have signed him, but when they signed him, are they looking to change the way that they play, or is it a matter of Cam Newton just coming in and playing the way that the Patriots want to play?
Boy, that's a great question. And I don't think we have an answer to that right now, because you're right. Cam Newton plays completely differently than Tom Brady. You know, the Patriots lack a lot of big-time weapons. The Patriots don't have a lot of great outside receivers. I mean, Julian Edelman has been their most consistent pass catcher over the last few years, and he just has he has an unbelievable, almost ESP-like relationship with Tom Brady, where it almost feels like Tom Brady could take a snap, shut his eyes, and just throw the ball to a spot, and he knows exactly where Julian Edelman is going to be. Julian Edelman is not going to have that type of rapport with Cam Newton, so that is going to have to be developed in a very short amount of time. I think the Patriots will try to do what Cam Newton does best, and that's use his body, that is throw the short passes, and then occasionally unleash a long pass. I mean, where Cam struggles is really that 15 to 25 yard area, where he's never been a particularly accurate quarterback. He does have a strong arm. We know that Cam can go downfield, so maybe we'll see a little more stretching the field with a guy like N'Keal Harry, who's entering his second year in the league. Didn't really have a chance to shine last year in his rookie season. He was a first-round draft pick, so they obviously put heavy resources into N'Keal Harry. So maybe that's the combination we see this year of Cam Newton throwing the ball downfield a little bit more, because Tom Brady can't throw much more than 35, 40 yards anymore, and usually doesn't even look that far down.
Now, Alan, in your years traveling around playing rugby in London, did you ever get to the church?
Church, mate, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it might not be. Loz, it might not be there anymore.
It might be a different name. But did you ever go to a club that opened at 10 in the morning and was closed by 5 in the afternoon?
Mate, I wouldn't know.
Now, Alan, before we get on to rugby matters, I believe you live with Lachie McCaffrey, your Brumbies teammate, on a farm outside of Canberra. Is that correct?
Yes, mate. Yes, that is correct.
Tell us what it's like living there with Lachie. I could imagine it's madness.
Yeah, mate, it is. It's my first time on a farm. But, mate, he's done well. He's got 40 acres just outside of Canberra. Mate, he's got a few horses on there, you know, a few cattle. So, mate, he's done well there.
And how do you contribute?
Mate, I'm just in the main room, mate. I've just got the ensuite, and that's pretty much all I do.
Have you got the boots and the Akuba and sort of walk around looking like you know what you're doing?
Yeah, mate, I let him go pick up all the, you know, all the manure and all that stuff, but I just direct him from the top.
Perfect.
I'm just pointing the finger, mate.
Everyone needs a director.
Well, there you were, Alan, 5-1 as we get on to rugby matters. So you were 5-1 in Super Rugby, a pandemic hit. So as captain, how challenging has it been to ensure that the Brumbies have the same standards as they had before?
Yeah, mate, it has been challenging, but I think, you know, with the group that we have, it's made my job, you know, very easy. You know, I think you gave boys a lot of trust to go home and, you know, when everyone was in quarantine to do their own fitness program and their own weight sessions, and everyone came back in good nick. You know, in terms of continuing the momentum from the beginning of the year, it's kind of hard to continue that when the last game was 3 months ago. So I think the new goal for us was to set new goals for this new Super Rugby comp, but most importantly, just build momentum off the last 4 weeks that we've had in pre-season and carry that through, you know, to tomorrow night.
Yeah, Alan, we've had a number of your teammates on the show over the past few months, and I get a real sense that the Brumbies are such a tight group. Everyone is really going over and above to stick together, particularly when you couldn't see each other for a long period. Is that something you guys are focused on to get yourself into a position where you are a really tight group?
Yeah, it is. It is, mate. And I think, as you mentioned, like, I think our Brumbies culture here has always been our point of difference. And I think the reason to that, like, firstly, everyone, most of the boys are from out of state, you know, so we only have each other here in Canberra. And then again, there's not much to do here in Canberra. You know, everyone's just trying to be out with each other and, you know, meet outside of footy. But when you don't get that opportunity, you know, you kind of miss that. So it was little things like our PT or organised sessions where we had to go run up a mountain, but we had to go run up in pairs. You know, but you're crossing paths with everyone when they're coming down. And it was little moments like that where you get to see the boys, you know, that you really appreciated. And, you know, you haven't seen boys for the last couple of weeks or you know, even a month, you know. So everyone just kept tabs over Zoom. And everyone was tagging, you know, each other on those videos on Instagram and all that. But you know, I think when everyone came back together, mate, it was just an exciting feeling and everyone was just keen to rip in again.
Now we're going to change tack and talk some NFL. It's been a storied off-season already, if not alone, aside from the pandemic, of course. New England, the Patriots, what a story they've been. Never has a team lost and gained an MVP in the one season. And now we're about to speak to an NFL reporter at the Sports Business Journal over there in the States, Ben Fisher. Hello, Ben, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us on the Big Sports Breakfast. Now, the NFL being such a financial juggernaut, but what is the extent of the financial fallout being forecast for teams? I see that the Buffalo Bills, for instance, are not going to allow fans, correct?
Yeah, that just came out last night that the state of New York has indicated that there won't be anyone who's not playing the game or a team employee allowed in at sporting events when they reopen. So that's one of 32 teams that looks like it's going definitely without any fans. Probably going to be the case for a lot of other teams, but most of them are still holding out hope they can twist some arms with the local government to get a few thousand in there.
And I see fans may have to sign coronavirus liability waivers as well to attend games. Is that right?
Yeah, that's just come out in the last day or two, and it's funny because even the people who, you know, would be creating these waivers understand that waivers are legally dubious. If somebody actually, if there's actually a COVID outbreak in the NFL game, those waivers will be the equivalent of a thick piece of paper and a bullet.
Ben, are they going to change the way that the, you know, the preseason games are played in terms of the amount of numbers? Will they go into the NFL season with no matches, or will they stick to their regular routine in the build-up?
Well, just yesterday, I reported that they intend to cut at least two of the four preseason games. So they have not officially announced that, but checking in today, that still seems to be the plan. The players' union may be pushing for no preseason games, but the league seems pretty intent on having two of the usual four. And that's an easy call, honestly. I mean, the preseason games still make a little bit of money, but it's nothing compared to the regular season. And all of this is trying to find a way to get the players up to season form in a safe way at a training camp without, you know, exposing them to any more risk than absolutely necessary. So I wouldn't be surprised if we ultimately get down to zero preseason games. But the plan, as I understand it, is to play two of the four right now.
Ben, it's just going to be so weird seeing Cam Newton in a Patriots jersey and therefore also Tom Brady in a Buccaneers jersey. Describe what the reaction's been.
Well, the reaction to the Cam Newton signing in New England was, New England fans love it, and fans of the other 31 teams just sort of roll their eyes and just say, you know, damn those guys. They always find a way to land with both their feet up. You know, they looked like they would finally be in for a down year with, you know, a rookie quarterback they like, but, you know, is not a superstar. And now, you know, Cam Newton, it's been a couple of years since he's been fully healthy, but at least on paper, he's got the capacity to be as good as anybody. So it looks like the machine will keep on rolling in New England.
Well, we know that New England had plenty of success with that Brady-Gronkowski combination. Ben, are you expecting the same impact at Tampa Bay with Brady and Gronkowski combining?
You know, Tampa Bay, I think, is easily the most interesting story in football going into this year, assuming there's a season, of course, just because, you know, Brady and Gronk are, as a fan of a team that usually got beat by them, you know, those guys seem to be unstoppable. But I do think that they're in a certain, you got to still prove it in Tampa Bay mode. Look, I mean, the number of players that have contributed meaningfully at Tom Brady's age historically is very low. So, I mean, I think you have to ask good questions about their productivity. I don't think they're going to be quite what they were at times 3 or 4 years ago in New England, but clearly it's better than Tampa Bay's been in a long time. And, you know, I don't know. I think the range for Tampa Bay with those guys on the team is anywhere from being only slightly better than they've been in the past to being a Super Bowl contender. It's hard to say just because as good as those guys look on paper, not unlike Cam Newton.
Thanks again for all the texts and emails. Loving the interaction at the moment, particularly as more sport comes back on the scene in the wake of the pandemic. And you can catch us Monday to Friday, 5:30 a.m. until 9.